But Lorena looked more depressed than mad and didn't respond. The next day, Lorena told her mom what happened, but she just said that she was probably dreaming and went back to cooking dinner. Jose Luis makes himself a sandwich, then goes into his bedroom. Lorena and I watch a reality show about a bunch of rich kids living in New York. It's stupid, but I try going along with it for Lorena's sake. I'm also curious because I want to move to New York for college. Ever since I was little, I imagined myself living in an apartment in the middle of Manhattan, writing late into the night. I keep watching until one of the blonde girls cries because her mom won't buy her a pair of shoes that cost more than my entire life. It's too much to take. I feel spiritually nauseated. This is garbage, I tell Lorena. Isn't there anything else more enlightening we could watch? Is there anything on PBS? Any documentaries? But she just ignores me. When the show is over, Lorena goes into the bathroom for a long time. I can hardly stay awake. I close my eyes, and after a few minutes, I feel something near me. Maybe their cat, Chimuela, finally came out from under the bed. When I open my eyes, though, I see Jose Luis crouched in front of me. He looks like he's doing something with his phone, but I'm not sure. Am I imagining this? Am I that high? I don't know what's going on. I cross my legs and pull my skirt down. And when I open my eyes, I'm alone again. Every Saturday night, Amma and Olga attended a prayer group in the church basement. Mostly, it's a bunch of Mexican ladies sitting in a circle, complaining about their problems and talking about how God will help them endure. The few times I did go, I was so bored I wanted to tear out all of my hair. We were there for 3 hours, and I couldn't take it anymore. I asked Amma if I could read the book I had in my bag, but she said it was impolite. When it was her turn to speak, Amma started telling the group about missing Mexico, her mother, and her dead father. She cried a lot, which made me feel guilty for complaining. Olga held her hand and told her everything was going to be okay, while I sat there like a slug, not knowing what to do. Amma was always trying to force me and Apa to go to these meetings, but we refused. Who in the world would want to spend their Saturday night talking about God? It's bad enough that she drags us to Mass every Sunday morning. After hounding us for a few years, she finally gave up. One Saturday night, Apa let me order Chinese food, which was gloriously greasy. We had to throw the boxes away in the alley so Amma wouldn't find out. We lied and told her we had eaten eggs for dinner. Amma hadn't been to the prayer group since Olga died. There is no way I'd go, but I'm glad Amma decides to attend tonight and is out of the house. On her days off, she lies in bed for hours and hours, and I worry that she'll never get up again. As soon as Amma leaves, I always ask Apa if I can go out, because he usually shrugs and tells me that if Amma found out, she'd be angry. But I just assume that means yes. I run out the door before he can protest. Lorena and Carlos, the new guy she's talking to, are supposed to pick me up at 7:30. She promised she'd make Carlos take us to his cousin Leo's house because he's a Chicago cop and might be able to help with Olga. I'm going to ask him how I can get more information about Olga at the Continental. Carlos is 17 and drives an old and battered red car with giant silver rims, which seems ridiculous to me. Why would you spend so much money on rims when the car is about to fall apart? But I'm not complaining. At least it's a ride. When I get close, I notice someone in the back seat. A guy. Lorena didn't tell me anyone else was coming. I get nervous and tug at my ponytail. I'm not wearing any makeup, and my hoodie is old and faded. I didn't even bother to look remotely attractive. Lorena gives me an apologetic smile. There was a change of plans. Leo had to work, and he said he couldn't help. We asked him, I swear to God. Julia, this is Ramiro, Carlos's cousin from Mexico. He's cute, right? Are you serious, Lorena? God damn it, you're unbelievable sometimes, I tell her, then turn to Ramiro to say hello. It's not his fault, after all. Nice to meet you, he says in Spanish, and kisses me on the cheek the Mexican way. Ramiro has long curly hair, which I don't care for, but I guess his face is okay. I do my best to ignore his pleather pants, too. He's trying so hard, it's embarrassing. He only speaks Spanish, which makes me nervous. I speak it fine, of course, but I sound 10 times smarter in English. My vocabulary is just not as extensive, and sometimes I get stuck. I hope he doesn't think I'm dumb, because I'm not. Lorena and Carlos tell me we're going to the lake. This was not the plan, and it's freezing outside. It doesn't seem like a good idea, but I don't argue because I don't want to piss off Lorena. When we arrive at North Avenue Beach, Lorena and Carlos run off, leaving Ramiro and me standing awkwardly by ourselves. Ramiro blows on his hands. I wrap my arms around myself under my jacket. After a few minutes, he starts playing with his phone, and I watch the beautiful lights reflected on the water. I kind of wish I were there by myself. When the silence becomes almost unbearable, Ramiro asks me about my favorite music. I tell him I mostly like indie and new wave, but he doesn't know what those are, and they're hard to explain in Spanish. You've never heard of Joy Division? He shakes his head. What about New Order? No. Neutral Milk Hotel? Death Cab for Cutie? Sigur Rós? He shakes his head and smiles. What do you like? Spanish rock? My favorite band is El Tri, he says, unzipping his jacket and showing me his t-shirt. Ugh, are you serious? I'd rather listen to dogs barking for 10 hours than listen to him for 5 minutes. I can't believe that's your favorite band. Jeez, what a turnoff. Wow. Okay, then, he says, turning away from me and looking toward the skyline. Lorena says I'm always blowing it with guys because of my big mouth. She thinks I need to give people a chance and be less of an asshole. I guess she's right because I think I hurt Ramiro's feelings. I'm sorry. That was so rude, I say. El Tri is a very well-respected band. Although they're not really my style, I'm sure they're talented. Sometimes I don't know when to shut up. It's a medical condition. They say it's incurable, like AIDS. This makes him laugh. I hope everyone continues to fight for the cure, he says. Yes, me too. Ramiro and I watch the water for a few minutes without speaking. The sound of the waves is soothing, and for a while I forget everything. Who I'm with, who I am, where I live. All I can think of is that sound. I think that's what meditation is supposed to be. I remember reading that in a book once. I stay in that trance until an ambulance races down Lakeshore Drive behind us. I search for Lorena and Carlos, but they're nowhere in sight. I bet they're probably fucking somewhere, even in this cold, and most likely without a condom, even though I've told Lorena 1,000,000 times that she's out of her mind. Lorena tells me your sister died, Ramiro says out of nowhere. That must be really hard. It's okay, I say, even though it's not. That's just what you're supposed to say. I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. How did she die? If you don't mind me asking. I do mind, but I tell him anyway. She got hit by a semi. It ran right over her. She wasn't paying attention.
Damn, I'm sorry.
Ramiro looks like he regrets the question. Every time I think about my sister, I feel like something clamps down on my chest and I can't get enough air. Why did he have to bring her up? And why did Lorena have to tell him? I see a man walking in the distance when I turn to the buildings. That guy is kind of freaking me out, I tell Ramiro.
Who?
That guy? He asks, pointing in his direction.
He won't do anything.
How would you know?
I guess I don't know.
He laughs. When I turn back, the man is walking away.
What if I protect you?
Sappy, but sweet in a way, I guess. I don't know what to say, so I mumble, okay, and shrug. Then Ramiro puts his hand on the back of my head and leans into me. I never imagined my first kiss to be this way, but I guess it could be worse. When will I ever find someone I really like? Probably never. I bet I'll be a virgin until I go to college. Ramiro's breath is slightly minty, and at first the kisses are soft and feel all right, but after a while he spirals his tongue against mine, which totally grosses me out. Is this really how people kiss? It feels like my mouth is being accosted. Right when I'm about to put an end to it, Lorena and Carlos come toward us, hooting and whistling. I'm so embarrassed, I want to bury my head in the sand like an ostrich.
Damn, girl, it's about time, Lorena says, smiling.
I don't bother responding. Carlos fist bumps Ramiro and says,
Good job, hermano.
Which annoys me. It's not like he won a motherfucking prize or anything. Chapter 6. My cousin Victor is turning 7 today, and my tío Bigotes,
yes, Uncle Mustache, is throwing him a big birthday party to celebrate, but I think it's just an excuse for him to get drunk.
As Ama is brushing her hair in the bathroom, I tell her she looks pretty and ask if I can stay home. I want to figure out how to get back inside Olga's room. The key must be in the apartment somewhere. But Ama says no without even bothering to look at me. Maybe she thinks that if she leaves me alone, I'm going to orchestrate a giant orgy or overdose on heroin. I don't know why she doesn't trust me. I keep telling her that I will never get pregnant like my cousin Vanessa, but it doesn't matter to her. Even if I don't find the key, at least I'd be alone. I'm hardly ever by myself in the apartment because Ama is always all up in my business and won't leave me behind. Sometimes when my parents go to bed, I open all the windows, which Ama hates, and let the breeze flap the curtains open. I sit in the living room with a cup of coffee, journal, book, and reading lamp. I like the late-night sounds of traffic, even if they're disrupted by the pops of gunshots. I decide to keep begging.
Ama, please. I just want to stay here and read. I hate parties. I'm just going to sit somewhere by myself. I don't want to talk to anyone.
What kind of girl hates parties?
This kind, I say, pointing to myself. You know that.
Theo's house always smells of old fruit and wet dog, which I don't understand because Chompiras has been dead for 3 years. The stereo is blasting Los Bukis,
and screaming children are running in and out of the house. Though I really hate kids, the part I hate most about these parties is arriving and departing. If I don't kiss each and every relative on the cheek hello and goodbye, even if I don't know them, Ama calls me a malcriada, a badly raised daughter.
You want to be like those güeros maleducados?
Ama always asks.
In that case, yes, I do want to be like an impolite white person.
But I just shut my mouth because it's not worth arguing about. I kiss everyone in the house hello, including Tio Cayetano, even though I can't stand him. When I was a kid, he used to stick his finger in my mouth when no one was looking. The last time he did it was during Vanessa's communion party when I was 12. I was in the bathroom while everyone was in the backyard. As I came out, he forced his finger in my mouth much deeper than the times before, so I bit him. I clamped my mouth and wouldn't let go. I think I wanted to reach bone.
¡Hija de tu pinche madre!,
he yelled. When I finally released his finger, he walked back outside, shaking his hand, letting the blood drip onto the floor. He told everyone the dog had bitten him and left the party with a paper towel wrapped around his finger. I sat in a corner for the rest of the night, drinking cup after cup of pop to get the salty, metallic taste of his blood out of my mouth. I wonder if he ever did anything like that to Olga. Tio Bigotes' wife, Paloma, rushes to get us some food once we finish greeting every single person at the party. Tia Paloma is a woman so big that her stomach hangs low and everything wiggles when she walks. Every time I see her, I wonder how she and Tio have sex. Or maybe they don't even do it now that Tio has that new mistress we've heard rumors about. Ama says Paloma has a thyroid problem, and I feel bad for her, but I've seen her eat 3 tortas in one sitting. Thyroid my ass. After I finish eating, I'm so full my pants nearly cut off my circulation. I'm uncomfortable no matter how I sit or shift. I almost want to lie down and let the food spread out. I don't know why I do this. Sometimes it's like I'm eating to drown something yowling inside me, even when I'm not really hungry. I pray that I never get as big as Tia Paloma.
Buena para comer,
Tia Milagro says, eyeballing my clean plate. Normally, I wouldn't be offended by a comment like this. Mexicans are always saying that about kids. It's meant as a compliment. Good eaters are people who'll eat anything put in front of them with no complaints. They eat with enthusiasm. It means they aren't picky or entitled brats. But this time, I know it isn't meant as praise, because Tia Milagros is always talking shit. I used to like her when I was younger, but she's become a bitter, resentful woman over the years. Her husband left her for a woman half her age a long time ago, and she's been salty ever since. It's hard to take her seriously with her red perm and 80s bangs, but it pisses me off that I've become a target of her passive-aggressive cracks. Something about me just makes her angry. She is always sucking her teeth at what I'm wearing or making some comment about my weight, even though she's more floppy and misshapen than a sack of laundry. She loved Olga, though. Everyone did. I watched my cousin Vanessa feeding her daughter mashed up beans. Only 16 and she already has a baby. That would be the worst thing that's ever happened to me. But Vanessa seems happy somehow. She's always giving Olivia kisses and telling her how much she loves her. I wonder if she'll ever finish high school. What kind of life can you have when you live with your parents and have a baby to take care of? Olivia is cute and all, but I never know what to do with babies. I walk outside and see my cousin's cousin Freddy and his wife Alicia arrive as the piñata is being set up. I've always been fascinated by them. Freddy graduated from the University of Illinois and works as an engineer downtown, and Alicia was a theater major at DePaul and works at Steppenwolf. They are always dressed like they stepped off a runway. Alicia has the most interesting outfits. Dresses made of bright, crazy fabrics and earrings that look like they belong in museums. Today, two silver hands dangle from her ears. Freddie wears dark jeans and a black blazer. There's no one in my family like them. No one has ever gone to a real college. I always want to ask them a million questions. Hey, guys. How are you? What's new? I feel like a frumpy dork when I talk to them because they seem so sophisticated. I get shy.
We're good, Freddie says solemnly. I'm so sorry about your sister. We were in Thailand and couldn't make it to the funeral.
Everyone in the house begins to come outside for the piñata. Victor suddenly starts crying because it isn't ready yet. Jesus, what a baby.
Yeah, we're so, so sorry, Alicia says, taking my hand.
That's what everyone says about Olga. Sorry, sorry, sorry. I never know what to say. Is thank you the right answer?
Thailand! How cool! What's that like?
I don't want to talk about my sister.
It was beautiful.
Freddie smiles. I see Tia Paloma wiping Victor's face with the end of her blouse. He's hysterical.
Yeah, we got to ride elephants, Alicia adds.
It was amazing.
So what are you thinking for college?
Freddie looks uncomfortable. He can probably sense that they shouldn't talk about Olga anymore. I think I might visibly recoil every time someone says her name. I don't really know. I want to move away to New York, I think. Somewhere with a good English program. But my grades haven't been great lately, so I'm kind of worried. I really have to get my GPA up or else I'm screwed. When I remember the C I got on my last algebra test, it feels like snakes hatching and slithering in my stomach.
Well, listen, if you ever need help with your applications or have any questions, please let us know. We need more people like you in college, Freddie says.
Totally. Alicia nods, her silver hands swinging. I can probably get you a summer job at my company when you're old enough. It would look great on a college application.
Thanks, I say.
I don't know what Freddie means by people like me. What am I like? Why would anyone care if I go to college or not? There's no one else I feel like talking to, so I go to the living room to read The Catcher in the Rye, which I had to smuggle in my bag because Ama always complains when I read at parties. Why do I have to be so disrespectful, she wants to know. Why can't I just be at peace with my family? But I don't feel like talking most of the time. And today, everyone is going to be asking about my quinceañera. Besides, all of my little cousins are still trying to break the piñata, and I doubt anyone will notice that I'm gone. I just hope Tio Cayetano doesn't come in here when I'm alone. I get to read for a solid half hour before I'm interrupted. When I get to the part where Holden drops and shatters his little sister's record, my dad and uncles pile into the dining room to bust out the expensive tequila from the liquor cabinet. I should have known. This happens at every party. Today, the bottle Tio Bigotes takes out is bright green and shaped like a gun. Like always, they sit around the dining room table, passing the tequila and talking about how great it was to live in their hometown of Los Ojos.
How I miss my little town. Chingao.
Tio Octavio closes his eyes and shakes his head, as if reminiscing about a lost love.
Remember how we used to skip school and go swimming in the river?
Tio Cayetano asks as he pours himself another shot.
I wish I never would have left, Apa says quietly.
If they love that town so much, why don't they just go back and live there? I wonder. Always crying about Mexico as if it were the best place on earth. I go back to my book, but Tio Bigotes motions for me to come near him.
Come here, mija.
I walk to the table and stand a few feet away, but he tells me to get closer. He pulls me toward him and puts his arm around my neck. His breath smells like tequila, cigarettes, and something deeper and more disgusting I can't figure out. I try to pull back subtly, but it's no use. His arm is locked around me. I wish Apa would save me, but he just looks down into his drink.
What were you doing here in the living room by yourself?
I was trying to finish my book, I explain.
What do you want books for at a party?
He slurs.
Family is what's most important in life, mija. Go outside and talk to your cousins.
But I like to read.
For what?
I want to be a writer. I want to write books. Tio Bigotes takes another gulp of his drink.
Are you excited about your party?
I guess.
What do you mean you guess? You should be excited. Your parents are making a big sacrifice for you.
Right. A sacrifice I don't want.
You know, without family, you won't make it in this life. And now that you're older, you have to learn how to be a nice señorita, just like your sister. May she rest in peace.
Theo nods his head dramatically, then looks me straight in the eye to see if I've understood his point. But I want to finish my book, Theo. I stumble over my Spanish and feel my face get hot. Tio Bigotes takes another shot of tequila and lets go of my neck as Ama comes into the living room. She purses her lips like she's just bitten into an onion and calls them all a bunch of sorry drunks.
Look at this one.
Tio Bigotes ignores her and gestures toward me with his glass.
With a cactus on her forehead and she can barely speak Spanish. This country is ruining your children, sister.
He points at Ama as he gets up from the table. No one seems to know what to say. Apa is still looking into his drink, as if searching for some sort of answer. Ama crosses her arms and glares at Tio Bigotes as he walks out of the room. Tio Cayetano pours himself another. This is number 4. I've been counting. Everyone is silent until we hear the violent puking coming all the way from the bathroom. I touch my forehead and imagine a spindly cactus pressed there, my face bloody, like Jesus. That night, I dream I'm sleeping in Ama's old room at Mama Jacinta's house when it catches fire. I run out into the street barefoot in a bright blue nightgown before it all burns down. I stand there watching the house as it crackles and sputters, the cool mud under my feet. Suddenly, Papa Feliciano, Ama's dead father, is standing behind me, holding a dead goat in his hands, its head hanging from its neck by a long, thin nerve. There is blood splattered all over his face and clothes. Everything is off, in the way dreams are. The house is much bigger than I remember, and there are giant oak trees everywhere. Some things are in reverse or upside down, like an empty car driving backward. I know I'm in Los Ojos, but it is so different, so deserted. The house across the street has been replaced by a field of sunflowers.
Where is Mama Jacinta?
I scream at my grandfather, but he doesn't answer. He offers me the limp goat in his arms. I scream and scream while he stands there, blinking at me. I don't know if Mama Jacinta is dead or alive. The fire begins to grow, so I run toward the river. I feel the heat on my back, singeing the ends of my hair. Rocks cut my feet. It's night, but the sky is still bright somehow. The sound of crickets is almost deafening. It smells like wet earth. I jump into the water when the fire finally reaches me, near the abandoned train station. When I open my eyes, the water is thick and dirty, and a group of mermaids tangled in garbage and seaweed swim toward me, their long hair floating all around their faces. Their tails are iridescent green, and their breasts are small and bare. The one in the middle turns toward me and waves. It's Olga. She has the same smile she had on her face when she died, and her skin is glowing, as if something were lit inside her.
Olga!
I yell, my lungs filling with cloudy water.
Olga, please come back!
The other mermaids gently take her away. I try swimming toward them, but my legs won't work. It's as if they're chained to the bottom of the river. I wake up crying, gasping for air.
Chapter 7.
Lorena has a new friend at school who's gay as a rainbow-colored unicorn. She met him in the lunch line when he complimented her ridiculous green heels. They started talking about clothes, makeup, and unfortunate fashion choices of the rich and famous, and that was that. Best friends forever. He told her about the wild and crazy parties he frequents with his entourage of drag queens, which got Lorena worked up. All she ever wants to do is party. Now they talk all the time, and even hold hands when they walk down the halls. When Lorena tells me his name, I refuse to believe it because it's so utterly stupid. His name is Juan Garcia, but he goes by Juanga, which is the nickname of Juan Gabriel, Mexico's most beloved singer, who is flaming but has never officially come out of the closet. How can he compare himself to him? I mean, it's like calling yourself Jesus Christ or Joan of Arc. So, of course, I hate him immediately. I can't deny that I'm jealous. Lorena and I have been Siamese twins since the day we met. Juanga better watch himself. Our history teacher is sick today, which means it'll be a free period. Our sub, Mr. Blankenship, breathes loudly through his mouth and wears a pilling green sweater two sizes too small. I can see his hairy belly when he lifts his arms. I don't know where the hell they find these people. The last substitute had a lisp and wore a fanny pack. Instead of continuing to work on our research projects, he pops in a documentary about World War II, which we've already covered. Not even 10 minutes into the movie and he's fast asleep, snoring wetly. The whole class slowly sprouts into chaos. Some people play music on their phones. Jorge and David throw a miniature football back and forth across the room, and Dario climbs on his desk and starts dancing, flipping his hair and pouting his lips. He does this every single time a teacher leaves the room. Something about the way he moves reminds me of a flamingo.
We have to go to a masquerade Juanga invited me to.
Lorena turns to me, her eyes wide.
Everyone, and I mean everyone, is going to be there. It's at this fancy loft in the West Loop.
Just hearing his name chafes me. Who is this everyone you refer to? You know I hardly even like people. Plus, my mom would have a heart attack. No way. Part of me is intrigued by the party, but the other part of me doesn't want to spend a night hanging out with Juanga. He hasn't reached arch-nemesis status, but I certainly don't want to be friends.
Oh my God, just lie to her, stupid. You never learn, do you? Tell her we're going on an overnight field trip to visit a college.
That doesn't make any damn sense. We're juniors, remember? How would she believe that? A bomb suddenly explodes in the video, and Mr. Blankenship wakes up for about half a second.
Here, take this to your crazy-ass mom.
Lorena says, handing me a sheet of paper. I already thought ahead. We have to go to this party.
According to the form, we're visiting the University of Michigan to see what college life is like. We'll be staying in the dorms, eating meals at the school cafeteria, watching a play, and taking a tour. Lorena translated it into Spanish on the back. She was even able to get it on the school letterhead somehow. I'm in awe. Where did you get this?
Don't worry about it, Lorena says, smiling.
Seriously, this is really impressive. I had no idea you were this smart.
Bitch!
Well?
Okay, I stole the letterhead from Mr. Zuniga's desk and made up the rest.
I guess you only play dumb, huh? I try patting her on the head, but she ducks and swipes at my hand.
If you miss this party, you're going to be sorry.
When I give Ama the permission form after school, she says no without even looking at me. That's what she always does. It's like I don't even deserve the dignity of eye contact. But I'm not surprised. Of course not. I was prepared for this. I even wrote notes beforehand to help guide my argument. I beg and plead and tell her how much I want to go to college, how this will be a great opportunity, how I need this for my emotional and intellectual development. After about 10 minutes of groveling, though, it's clear she's not having any of it.
No daughter of mine is going to be sleeping in the streets.
The streets? That doesn't make any sense. I'm going to be in a dorm.
You think you're all grown up. You're only 15. You don't even know how to make a tortilla.
I'm beginning to froth with fury. Ama is so dramatic. Sometimes I want to run out of our apartment screaming and never come back. I don't know what tortillas have to do with anything. This is ridiculous. I want to go to college. I want to see the world. I never get out of this stupid neighborhood. My bottom lip quivers. I'm almost starting to believe my own lie.
You can live here and go to college, you know. That's what Olga did.
Absolutely not. Never. I'd rather live in a barrel than stay here and go to community college. Olga went there for 4 years and never even graduated. I'm not entirely sure what she was studying. Business something.
How come Olga never felt the need to be out in the streets like some sort of gypsy? She was always so comfortable here at home, spending time with her family. Bien a gusto, mi niña.
Ama looks up at the ceiling, as if she's trying to talk to my sister in heaven.
She was not a girl. She was a grown woman.
I don't know why that pisses me off so much. I run to my room and slam the door. I hate when Ama sees me cry. The night of the masquerade, I try to read in the living room, but I can't concentrate because I'm so jittery. I'm just waiting until my parents go to bed so I can slink out of the apartment. On Fridays, they usually go to sleep at about 9, which is so depressing. I'd hate to be old and lame and never do anything fun on weekends. That's why I won't ever get married or have kids. What a pain in the ass. Half an hour after they've gone to sleep, I tiptoe to their door and listen. I hope to God I never, ever hear them having sex, because if I do, I might have to put poison inside my ears. Maybe they don't have sex anymore, though. Who knows? Thankfully, I can hear them both snoring. I don't understand how Ama sleeps through Apa's terrifying growls. I creep back to my room and stuff my bed with pillows and an extra blanket. I take one of my old dolls and put it where my head would be. I cover most of it, but leave some strands of her dark hair out to make it look more realistic. I'm pleased with myself for being so clever. If Ama opens the door and doesn't turn on the light, it will definitely work. I've caught Ama peering in here some nights. She is so paranoid. If, for some reason, she decides to lift up the blanket, I've left a note saying I'm with Lorena because she's having a crisis and that I'll be back soon, don't worry. I doubt it would help much, but it seems better than nothing. Once I put on my only decent black dress, I text Lorena to come get me, and she says she and Wanga will be here in 5 minutes. I walk toward the door as quietly as possible. I'm afraid to even blink. It takes me an eternity to turn the doorknob because I don't want to make any noise. When I shut it, I pray that I haven't woken my parents. Now I have to wait on the steps in the cold until they arrive. The sidewalk in front of our building has been crumbling for years, and no one has ever bothered to fix it. The few trees on the street are scrawny and have already lost most of their leaves. I hope no one passes by right now. I'm so tired of being harassed by pervs around here. They'd probably bother anything with the semblance of boobs, human or not. I keep checking the time, silently cursing Lorena for lying to me about how long it'd take. What if Ama wakes up and sees me outside? What if someone notices me and rats me out? Our next-door neighbor, Doña Josefa, is always peering out the window and is the biggest chismosa I've ever met. I keep thinking and thinking of all the worst-case scenarios until I feel like a tornado of worry and consider going back to bed. This party better be the best thing that's ever happened to me. Finally, I see them pull up. It turns out that Wanga doesn't have a license, but he's borrowed his dad's car anyway. "Don't worry, bitch. I'm not going to kill you," he says, cackling like a maniac when he sees my worried face. We park in front of a gigantic warehouse just west of downtown. The street is dark, and the building looks ancient and abandoned. I'm convinced we'll be raped and or murdered, but I don't say anything because I don't want to be a buzzkill. The only thing that comforts me is that there are a ton of cars parked outside. Nice ones, too. Before we enter, Wanga hands us both masks. Mine is covered with peacock feathers and rhinestones, which is not really my style, but I'll go with it. I'm totally wrong about the apartment. It doesn't look like a crime scene. In fact, it's unlike anything I've ever seen before. I wonder what these people do for a living because this place belongs in a magazine. Chinese lanterns, what appears to be real artwork, and intricately designed rugs. God, I would love to live in a place like this all by myself. I can't wait to get out of our dilapidated apartment one day. Everyone turns to look at us. We're definitely the youngest people here. They can probably tell, even though we're wearing masks. After a few minutes of awkward lingering, a large woman in a tight leather dress and red mask comes running toward us.
"Hey, bitch,"
she says to Wanga and gives him a kiss on the cheek.
"Hey,"
Wanga squeals and turns to us.
"This is Maribel, our beautiful host this evening."
"Such a pleasure," Maribel says, giving a dramatic bow. Her dress is cut so low that I'm afraid one of her boobs will pop out.
"Make yourselves at home. Don't be shy. There are drinks in the dining room."
The three of us make our way to the liquor. Lorena and Wanga pour some shots of I don't know what. I refuse because the last time I drank shots of vodka with Lorena, I threw up so hard it came out of my nose. I open a beer instead, which I regret immediately. This must be what pee and bile taste like. The only other time I tasted beer was when I was 12 and secretly took a sip of Apa's old style when he was in the bathroom. It was disgusting then, and it's disgusting now. I drink it down fast without breathing through my nose. The mask is uncomfortable on top of my glasses, and it's making me sweat and itch. I would have worn my contacts, but I ran out. I'm afraid it's going to give me a pimple, so I take it off. I zone out,
watching the skyline, when a man in a Phantom of the Opera mask pulls me out to the dance floor. I have no idea who he is, but I don't have to worry because everyone here is queer or trans. It's nice not to have to deal with creepy-ass dudes for once. The DJ is playing James Brown, and everyone is going wild, flailing their arms and screaming the lyrics. I'm not a good dancer, but I like the beat. Besides, I can't look any worse than the man next to me, dancing like a Tyrannosaurus Rex. After a few songs, I begin to loosen up. When I shake my shoulders like the drag queens, they laugh and clap. I'm fascinated by the women here. Even if they're fat, they move as if they think they're fabulous. I wish I could be like that. As I spin around with a lady in a cat suit, someone taps me on the shoulder. A small woman, wearing a silver mask, tilts her head, as if she's trying to figure out how she knows me. Yes? Wait, are you Olga's little sister? Julia? She yells over the music. What? Who are you? I shout back, giving her major side eye. I have no clue who she is. You don't remember me? She takes off her mask. Obviously not. I'm Jasmine, remember? Olga's friend from high school. Look at you, all grown up. Then it comes to me. Jasmine, with the overbite and droopy eyes. I remember her name was spelled stupid, too. Even as a kid, I thought she was insufferable. Kind of, I say, uninterested. I don't feel like talking to her. I don't want to explain. Aren't you a little young to be at a party like this? How old are you again? There are nosy people everywhere I turn, apparently. I pretend not to hear. Oh, man, I spent so much time at your house. Olga, Angie, and I were inseparable sophomore year. I remember you were such a sensitive little girl, always crying about something. I roll my eyes. Why does everyone remind me how much I sucked as a kid? You know, I haven't seen Olga in years. I ran into her when I was shopping a few years ago. She kept going on and on about this guy she was in love with. She was all excited. I had never seen her so happy. The music gets louder, and I can feel the bass thumping throughout my body. Wait, what? Do you mean Pedro the aardvark? Or was it someone else? What? Jasmine cups her hand to her ear. The dude that looked like an aardvark. Pedro. I use my hand to illustrate a snout since she can't understand, but she is still confused. Jasmine moves in closer. I can feel her hot breath on my face. So how is Olga? We didn't keep in touch after I moved to Texas. I come back every once in a while. This is my cousin's party. She points to Maribel, who blows us kisses. She's dead. I refuse to say passed away like everyone else. Why can't people say what they mean? What? Jasmine looks confused. I said she's dead. I feel the beer slosh around in my stomach. The room is twirling now. I can't believe this. We're friends. Jasmine looks like she might cry. Maybe I shouldn't have told her. How did it happen? She was so young. Oh my God. She got run over by a semi. It happened in September. I can't go anywhere without talking about my dead sister. And every time I do, I think I might pass out or throw up. Jasmine's eyes well up with tears. I leave her standing there and run to the bathroom. When I bend over the toilet, nothing comes out. I splash cold water on my face, which smudges my eyeliner and mascara. I try wiping my makeup with a piece of toilet paper, but I still look like the Joker. I'll just have to put my mask back on. I take a few deep breaths before I go back outside. I'm having a hard time breathing at a normal pace, like my body suddenly forgot. Maybe Jasmine wasn't talking about Pedro. I rush out and look for her all throughout the loft. I even look outside, but she must have left. I don't see her anywhere. I find Wanga and Lorena doing shots in the kitchen.
Here, take this. You need it.
Lorena hands me a glass. The smell of it makes my stomach flip, but I drink it anyway. It burns my throat and sends a pleasant warmth all throughout my body. My muscles begin to soften. No wonder so many people are alcoholics. I'm drunk by the time Wanga and Lorena are ready to go home. I don't know exactly how many drinks Wanga had, but I'm 100% sure he shouldn't be driving. What choice do I have, though? How else would I get home? I can barely keep my eyes open, but I can feel Wanga swerve all over the expressway. When we get off the exit ramp, he slams on the brakes so hard I nearly hit my head on the back of Lorena's seat.
Sorry, sorry, sorry,
he slurs. I hope to God that Wanga doesn't kill me, because then Ama would truly go crazy. It's nearly time to wake up and start the day again. The sky is still dark, but it's beginning to brighten. There are beautiful, faint streaks of orange over the lake. It looks like it's been cracked open. I think of Jasmine's face when I told her about Olga. Everywhere I go, my sister's ghost is hovering. Chapter 8. Ama asks me to clean houses with her today. Scratch that. She forces me to clean houses with her today. The lady she usually works with pulled a muscle in her back and can't get out of bed. Not only that, Ama says I should earn my quinceañera, even though I would rather eat a bowl of amoebas than go through with it. Now that I'm almost a woman, it's time I learn to be responsible, Ama says. Not exactly the way I want to spend a Saturday, but I have no choice. What am I going to say? Go clean those mansions by your damn self. I feel like writing and taking a nap. That would not be acceptable, especially since Olga, my angelic sister, was our mother's reliable helper. All the houses we have to clean are in Lincoln Park, one of the richest neighborhoods in Chicago. The first one belongs to a man who isn't home. It's already spotless, so it only takes about an hour. Easy breezy. People really do spend money on the dumbest things. The second house is a few blocks away, and the owner is an uptight lawyer who peers over our shoulders the whole time, talking to us in her horrible high school Spanish, even though I can guarantee my English is better than hers. I hate her and her beige furniture from the start, but I just play along and pretend me no speak English. Ama says it's best not to talk to them if it can be avoided. It takes us 3 hours to finish because we have to do laundry, too. I don't know why she can't do it herself. I mean, she was there the whole entire time. Some people are so lazy. The last place is a two-story brownstone near the DePaul campus. The owner tells us he's a professor of anthropology, as if we care. A real prig, too. He introduces himself as Dr. Scheinberg and uses the word propitious. I know what that means, of course. I read, duh. But why would you use words like that with a Mexican cleaning lady? As Mr. Ingman says, know your audience. Dr. Scheinberg tells us he'll be back in 3.5 hours. When he says farewell instead of goodbye, I want to punch him right in the throat. But I just smile and wave back. The house looks like a museum. It's filled with multicolored rugs, brown and black African masks, and statues of men and women in weird sexual positions. Everything looks like it costs thousands of dollars and belongs in a glass case. At first glance, it appears to be clean, but when you look closer, there are crumbs and filth everywhere. Dust bunnies the size of rabbits.
Ave Maria Purissima,
Ama mutters, and makes the sign of the cross. She probably thinks he's a Satanist. She's always assuming people are Satanists. Ama says we should begin with the most disgusting parts of the house. The bathrooms. Better to get them over with. The master bathroom is covered with piles of wet clothes and towels. The sink is smeared with gobs of toothpaste and little black hairs. Gross. I kick everything to the side and approach the toilet. It only makes sense to start with the worst of the worst. I put on the gloves Ama gave me, take the brush from its stand, and hold my breath.
Go on, Ama says.
This is what I was dreading the most. I can deal with filth, but toilets? Other people's toilets always upset me. I once got a urinary tract infection after holding in my pee for hours because I couldn't find a suitable bathroom. The other two we scrubbed today were easy because they were already relatively clean. But I doubt that's going to be the case here. I lift the lid, and it's worse than I expect. Much worse. A giant black turd. Is this real? Is this some kind of joke? Is there a hidden camera somewhere? I jump back and begin to gag. My eyes water. What the hell does this man eat? Coal?
Don't be so delicate. Flush it and clean it,
Ama says, rolling her eyes as if she sees this kind of biological warfare on a daily basis. Well, she might, actually. I breathe through my mouth and try to clean it as quickly as possible. When we're finished with the master bathroom, we move on to the guest bathroom, which seems like a walk in a beautiful garden in comparison. Thank God. Why does one man need more than one toilet? I have no idea. I'm afraid the bedroom is going to be full of sex stuff, but the grossest thing we find is crumpled tissue on the floor next to the bed and nail clippings on his dresser. There are clothes and shoes strewn everywhere, too. I thought I was messy, but this man is a complete barbarian. Next is the kitchen. The fumes burn the inside of my nose as I scour the stove. I wonder how many chemicals Ama is exposed to every day. I wish we had music because the silence is making me restless. All I hear is squeaking, spraying, and wiping. How does Ama do this day in and day out? So, did Olga like to clean with you? I don't know what else to say, but I can't stand that it's so quiet.
Like it? Who likes cleaning? No one likes it. It's just what you do.
Okay. I'm sorry I asked. Ama looks a little ashamed for being so harsh.
It's okay, mija.
It seems like she's really trying to think of something to say.
How is school?
It's okay. I lie. The truth is that school is excruciating. I love reading and learning, but I can't stand everything else. I don't have many friends and feel lonely all the time. Ever since Olga died, it's gotten even worse. It's like I don't know how to talk to people. That's why I'm always trying to lose myself in books. I love my English class. Mr. Ingman says I'm a good writer.
Mm-hmm, that's good,
Ama says, but she's not paying attention. She doesn't say much whenever I tell her anything about school. She doesn't know a lot about it because she had to drop out when she was in eighth grade to help with the family business. Apa quit when he was in seventh grade in order to work in the fields. It's strange not being able to talk to your parents about something so important. As I look at a painting of a woman with a large butt hanging in the dining room, I remember Olga's friend Jasmine, who also has a large butt.